It's 2017. I'm James Carlton. God forbid. And hello, welcome to God Forbid. It's episode 3 of our RN show and podcast, and our fabulous panel as well, to grapple with life's big, small, and medium-sized questions. For example, does religion always lead to violence? It did during the Crusades, when Christians from Europe went to kill Muslims in the Middle East.
But they went down to get the Muslims out, the Islamic people out of Jerusalem, I believe it was that, and they were hacking into them. I kill you in the name of Jesus. But the Muslim people, no, Jesus is a prophet in our religion. We kill you in the name of Jesus. Do you? I didn't know that. Jesus and your, oh, right, well, I kill you for your dark skin, for Jesus was a white man from Oxford. No, he wasn't. He really was not. It's from Judea, dark-skinned man, such as we. Really? Look, we've come all this way. Would you mind awfully if we hacked you to pieces? Just for the press back home.
Uh-huh. Fake news from the Middle Ages. Eddie Izzard style. Religion and violence, that's ahead. Plus religion and politics. In America, they certainly mix. The Moral Mondays movement is spreading. It's a Christian campaign of civil disobedience led by a left-wing pastor with oratory reminiscent of Martin Luther King. And we'll hear him preach politics later in the show. Plus halal certification, is it actually ripping off Muslims? We now have halal buttons, halal paint, halal condoms, even halal water.
There are a lot of things that do not need to be certified halal. These actions are just going overboard. Let's face it. Water is water. It is halal.
Imran Musa, an interview coming up you won't want to miss. It'll include some jaw-dropping revelations that'll shock Australia's Muslim community, at least as much as non-Muslims. And to get there, as we do each week, we have our learned God forbid panel. Our first panelist says, we've got to stop labelling people into pigeonholes because pigeonholes aren't big enough for people. They only fit pigeons. I'm not going to give you a name yet, but welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to test your theory. It's an idea I've had, that labels in isolation give a misleading impression. So we're going to run through your labels. These things are true. So paint a picture in your mind as to what you think this panelist is and what he's all about. He was educated at the prestigious private Anglican high school, St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney. He became involved in the Liberal Party, was elected to the State Council, and became active in Tony Abbott's right-wing faction, battling the moderates. You're building a picture? Things then settled down as he graduated from university, law, economics. He was admitted as a solicitor. You might now have a pretty rounded picture of who he is, in which case you'll know what happened next. He also studied at a Pakistani madrasa and could well have met Osama bin Laden, because behind his parents' back as a teenager, he hoped to fight holy jihad and die a martyr's death in Afghanistan with the Mujahideen. On that basis, we say, Irfan Yusuf, welcome to God Forbid.
Oh, g'day. How are you going?
Very well. Thankfully, you never went. Your story is told in your memoir, Once Were Radicals. But the point you made about labels, did that prove it?
Well, you know, it's funny that sometimes these kinds of things are actually helpful. Like when you mentioned that book that got published, when it first got published, I asked my publisher to send copies to all the most rabidly anti-Muslim columnists and what have you, you know, Andrew Bolton, all those kinds of people, just so that they could create a stir. I was hoping to get some free publicity, but it didn't work.
Speaking about false assumptions, I mean, that picture I painted you about as a jihadist, one might think that you may, had you gone, you may well have ended up in Guantanamo Bay. But in fact, had you gone, you perhaps could have ended up in the White House getting a medal. Explain why.
Well, yeah, because I wanted to go to Afghanistan to fight the Soviet Union, the evil empire, as Ronald Reagan referred to it. This was all funded largely by the United States and also by America's Arab allies. And so, I would have been a hero.
Not to your mum.
No. My parents would have killed me. If I hadn't have died, my parents would have killed me.
Well, it's a Hobson's choice. To our next panellist on God Forbid, we can play another round of Pick the Pigeonhole. One, he's a religious radical who makes no secret of the fact he's willing to die for his religion. He's written a book in defence of martyrdom. It even says children should be prepared to martyr themselves, and somehow that book got into the New South Wales school curriculum before it was banned. Getting the picture of who he is? Of course you are. You'll know I'm talking about Dr. Michael Jensen, the rector of St. Mark's Anglican Church in Darling Point, Sydney. Michael Jensen, welcome to God Forbid.
Well, thanks for having me, James, and thanks for making me appear that way. I'm happy to own all that label. Yeah, that's
really? Did I get it right? Your book wasn't banned. I mean, it was...
The word banned is so good, though. You know, everyone wants to be a banned author. Oh. I mean, it sounds fantastic. It was actually taken out of a syllabus that was being run on the New South Wales scripture courses in high schools, mostly because I did talk about being willing to die for your faith, and that kind of fit the criteria for being sort of extremist and radical. So they were a bit worried about that, the department, and so they withdrew it. Yeah, so it's me and Lady Chatterley and Portnoy's Complaint and all those other great banned books of history.
On our end, God forbid, we're with Ifan Yusuf, author of Once Were Radicals, and we're with Michael Jensen, rector of St. Mark's Anglican Church in Darling Point, Sydney. Now to war and religion. Light topic. Does religion cause war? Do they have everything to do with each other? Or nothing? Eddie Izzard can see a link between Catholicism and extreme violence. He can see a link between Islam and violence. But he can't get his mind around the idea of nice, rolling countryside villages and the Church of England and violence.
Everyone who is into the Islamic religion is having a jihad every other bloody day. There's a lot of very relaxed Islamic people, and we've got to understand and remember this, it's very important. And we do assume that jihads are just like, you know, every day three jihads are just issued by every individual. It just seems they're everywhere. But you can't do that in Church of England. You can't say, you must have tea and cake with a vicar or you die. You can't have extreme points of view. You know, the Spanish Inquisition wouldn't have worked with Church of England. Talk, will you talk? But it hurts. Well, loosen it up a bit, will you?
Eddie Izzard, how would history have been different, Michael Jensen, had they loosened it up a bit, do you think?
Well, speaking as a Church of England vicar myself, well, it would have been a lot better. You know, the episode of the Inquisition, I mean, I've got to say, the Church of England, in the name of empire, owned slaves, for instance, in the 18th century. It persecuted Baptists, including the great John Bunyan, who wrote Pilgrim's Progress. So it's certainly got things to answer for. And I think if they'd actually returned to their religious text, this is the key thing for me. If you'd returned to your religious text and the founder of Christianity, the central figure of Christianity, Jesus Christ, and his teachings and the teachings of his apostles, and you'd read them right, then I think you wouldn't have done this.
And the new atheists say, you know, this is always the argument. If only religions were interpreted in the way God meant, there'd be no war. And they're not interpreted in that way. And there's always war that has a religious component to it. Let's just stop religion.
You get atheism. Atheism's been tried and it doesn't lead to the end of war.
But they'll say that their atheism doesn't cause the war.
I would say it certainly does, and it certainly causes persecutions and torturing and all the rest of that.
Some examples? Well,
I mean, communist states all over the world.
I can agree that atheism itself does not start war, but then the same thing you can say about religion.
Just on the communists, though, the communists killed because they were an expansionist empire, not because they didn't believe in God.
Well, it was an essential part of their expansionism that they did not believe in God. I mean, Stalin moved hundreds of thousands of people who are Chechens and of whatever. He regarded their religiosity as being a problem.
What history shows is that the inexorable connection between religion and violence is not there to be made. Mm. Take away the religion and you still get the violence. Really what we need then, I would say to the new atheist, is first of all, a better examination of the human heart, a little bit more suspicion of ourselves, and secondly, better reception of our religious texts. So it's not about getting rid of religion, which I think is a kind of impossibility in any case.
I agree with you there, except that I would refer to them as evangelical atheists.
Well, that's interesting, the argument that new atheists are themselves fundamentalist in their religion. But let's just take it back to the point that you were making, Michael, that there were religious wars where if you took the religion out, there still would have been a war.
Definitely, yes.
Well, let's go through Northern Ireland, Protestant versus Catholic.
Yeah, you've got two identities there, really. You've got a sort of native Irish identity, and you've got a British and Scottish immigrant community, which is wealthier than the working class Irish. So there's certainly more than the religious there.
India, Pakistan partition, Hindu versus Muslim?
No, I don't think you could argue that that's pure Hindu versus Muslim. Pakistan was a nation built for Indian Muslims. And of course, the problem with that argument was that most of the Indian Muslims stayed behind in India.
I think it's like, what, is it 200 million Muslims in India or some such?
And not only that, but a lot of people who moved from India to Pakistan, they found themselves in a situation where they often were discriminated against by the indigenous groups. It wasn't as simple as religion.
Are there any sectarian conflicts we've had which, if there was no religion, there would have been no war? That's what I'm trying to drill down into.
I wouldn't deny that there are cases in which religion has played a very, very major part in people. You know, religion's a very, very broad category. There's a lot of things go under that, and there's a lot of people have done a lot of things.
But new atheists shouldn't be so proud of themselves. Oh, we got Michael Jensen to concede that. You can't strip culture from religion even if you want. The fact is there was religion in that war. You can't suddenly make the entire globe atheist.
No, that's sad. So you're better off actually having a more thoughtful, more considered way of discussing religion, a better educated populace about religion. You have people who are ignorant of their own faith in a way, and so then they're pretty much open to whoever comes along and says, this is what it means to be you, and what that means is that you must be belligerent up against
food. The funny thing is that some of the Aussie kids that went off to Syria to fight for ISIL, or maybe they were English, I can't remember, but among the books they bought off Amazon was Islam for Dummies, you know, the Quran for Dummies. So, I mean, these were kids who had absolutely no idea.
Which brings us to the question of martyrdom, and you wanted to be a martyr at one point in your life. Tell me about that.
I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to die on the fields of battle in Afghanistan fighting the good fight? Because we were so convinced in those days.
But who's we? Your parents aren't.
Not we, but I mean, some of the kids I used to hang around with, because all around us was this idea that the Afghan Mujahideen were noble fighters. And this was everywhere. It was on the news, it was in media, because if you weren't supporting the Mujahideen, it meant you were supporting the communists.
And this is in the Cold War.
Yes, and this is a Cold War time.
Had you gone to Afghanistan and died a martyr's death, what did you think would happen to you?
Well, I thought I'd probably end up going to heaven.
With 72 virgins?
Actually, you know, I've looked everywhere in different scriptures for the 72 virgins. I haven't been able to find it.
Is that what stopped you wanting to be a martyr?
The fact that there were no 72 virgins?
Yes.
No, well, because there were no 72 virgins, because it's something that's, I don't know where it comes from.
You thought there were, found out there weren't. No, I didn't think there were.
I never thought there were.
Right.
Because of the fact that the whole 72 virgins thing, as far as I'm aware, it's a myth. I haven't found it in the Quran. I haven't found it in any of the Hadith literature.
I think in the Hadith, it does mention there are virgins. It just doesn't put a number on it.
No. And it mentions you have companions when you go to paradise, and that's women as well as men.
Would you be prepared to die for your religion now?
I don't see any reason to die at the moment, because I think there are ways you can serve truth without having to die.
So you've moved on. In that sense, you're anti-martyr. Michael, what about you? Would you be prepared to die for your faith?
I hope that I am. Jesus says if he calls someone, then they should take up their cross and follow him. And so I think that means giving your whole life to Christ, which means possibly being prepared to die if that's the choice before you. What's quite crucial, though, is that never happens as a Christian on the field of battle. It cannot happen with a weapon in your hand. Christianity is not a faith to kill for. It's a faith to die for. And so there are times in history where Christians have been faced with that choice. Back to the early years of persecution, and then up to Graham Staines, the Baptist missionary, only just a few years ago. The important thing is that Christ himself is the emblem. See, Jesus is not an aggressor. He's not a weapon carrier. He's a victim of others who want to put him to death.
What about the broader understanding of martyrdom that exists, especially in more recent years, which is it's a fanatic who will do anything for religion?
I can understand that fear because we have the spectre of the suicide bomber haunting us, the person who will do something as...
Is a suicide bomber a martyr?
No, never. So that kind of inhumane, up yours attitude to the rest of humanity is so far from what Christians envisage martyrdom to be. They're just complete opposites. And yet they've become the same in the popular mind. The word martyr, by the way, means witness, as you would be in a court of law. You're giving testimony to the shape of Christ's life. So the early Christians died saying, I can't worship the emperor because he's not God. That's a pretty strong thing to say in ancient Rome. He's not God. I can't worship. I can't sacrifice to him. But I pray for him. I honour him. And I now, as a witness to Jesus Christ, I hope that he accepts Jesus Christ as well.
It worked in the
end. Out of love, you see. And it was a remarkably successful missionary strategy.
Political strategy, you might even argue.
Indeed, very political, yeah.
Irfan, is a suicide bomber, can he or she be a martyr?
Only God knows who the real martyrs are. And as you said, the word martyr means witness. And that's also what the word shahid, yeah, which is Arabic, also means a witness. And there's even a saying of the prophet on the Day of Judgment where the first person to be brought to be judged is someone who calls themselves a martyr. And what happens to that person is that God orders that they be sent to hell.
Well, that may be what happens after life, but what happens in life is that martyrs are revered. In many cases, the family of the people who've suicide bombed themselves, the Iranians will give West Bank money to give them.
Yes.
And they know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that's a political thing as well. It's a political martyrdom. But is there a line between the two?
No, I would say what you're saying is, in Christianity, you're saying Jesus Christ is Lord, not the emperor. That's a political statement right there. You're saying the emperor or the regime under which you are sitting, you are not absolute.
Yeah. You say who's the boss...
Yes, it's a political statement.
Yeah.
Ultimately, one of the things that Muslims are taught is that they should always stand up for justice. Now, if you see an injustice going on, what purpose would it serve by you going off and killing yourself or dying or whatever? You're better off fighting for the cause by doing other things where you stay alive and you actually, for example, you advocate or you write or you speak. I can understand there are situations where if your cause is being harassed or attacked or whatever, and you may be attacked, then, yeah, maybe you may end up dying not because you want to, but because that's what happens.
That's quite crucial in Christianity. Martyrdom isn't something that you seek. It's something that happens to you. To you. Janani Luwum, the Archbishop of Uganda, who stands up against Idi Amin in 1977, his bullet-riddled body is found after he disappears. He doesn't seek martyrdom, but yet he challenges Idi Amin. He must do that. Now, he wants to stay alive. I think that's important. The Christian martyr loves life and it's not a death cult. In the world in which terrorism is so much haunting this discussion, to die for one's faith is not to hate life, it's to love it.
And on that note, we move on. We're with Irfan Yusuf, solicitor, author, and with Michael Jensen, the rector at St. Mark's Anglican Church in Sydney.